Packers fans, and welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein here at our office in Lambeau Field, where, guys, we're running a little late tonight because the Packers decided to take this one into overtime and then use every second of overtime. It took a full 70 minutes to get a 27-24 win over the New England Patriots. On paper, that doesn't sound bad, but the Patriots were on their third-string quarterback, Bailey Zappe, a rookie, getting his first NFL action. Packers had pretty much everyone back that they needed except for Jaire Alexander, who was ruled out before the game, still nursing that groin. Didn't think that would be a huge deal. And to be fair, it might not have been because it was really sort of the Patriots' run game that tore the Packers up tonight. I just jumped around all over the place in the first 30 seconds. So, Spoon, I'm just going to start with you. A 27-24 overtime win, is that helpful come January, or is that worrisome now? Is it ugly, or is a win as a win?
Well, it was, you take any victory you can, and you got to build up home field advantage possibilities. But, you know, even if they had lost, it's an AFC game, it wouldn't have been the end of the world. I think they ran into kind of a desperate team, but also one that I don't know that people were been kind of writing them off, because they're a very good defensive team. I mean, really good. And today they ran the ball like nobody's business. And so I think they exposed some weaknesses of the Packers. I think the run defense has got to be addressed. It's not exactly what Joe Barry is known for. I think they're more known for pass defense. But they got to clean some things up in the run game.
Ryan, that was sort of the big discussion in the locker room with the defensive guys after the game. And, you know, Kenny Clark spent a decent amount of time talking about what's wrong in the run game, but he also seemed confident that it's something they could fix and fix quickly. You know, at one point I even asked him, is that something you can fix in a week in the middle of a season? And he said, yeah, exactly. But he said, yeah, we can, because we know what's wrong. Can you look at this defense right now and say, okay, well, this is where the run defense holes are. They have the depth to fix it in season.
They got a lot of talent. We know that. I mean, look, bottom line is they got to play better against third-string rookie quarterback. And I understand that the Packers didn't know much about Bailey Zappe before today. That's what Matt LaFleur said after the game. I didn't know he existed on this planet before today, if I'm being honest. But it doesn't matter. You're a third-string rookie quarterback on the road. You're not supposed to struggle against an offense like that. And what that does is, you know that they're running the football. And so when you know that they're going to run the football and you can't stop it, there's no element of surprise there. That's the alarming thing. There's a lot of defense, talent on this Packers defense. Other than a drive or two here or there, they were pretty good. They only gave up 17 points in a vacuum. That's not bad, but it's not a vacuum. It's a third-string rookie quarterback when you're at your stadium. It's got to be better.
You want to know something interesting about, you said that you didn't know Bailey Zappe existed before today. When we were at the combine, when Spoon and I were at the combine, I had a draft expert tell me, you know, something that the Packers used to do with Favre was they would draft a quarterback who would come in and push him in camp to essentially piss him off and push him and build that quarterback's tape up and then trade him away for good leverage. And they did that with Hasselbeck and a couple others. And they said, if the Packers were going to do that this year, they should get Bailey Zappe out of Western Kentucky.
And that's so, where he went to college. That's where. Thank you for answering that question.
His 1 year in college, he threw, I'm not making these numbers up, 5,967 yards and 62 touchdowns in 1 year.
He was just a machine in college.
He was.
He's not a bad quarterback. He looked, I know coming into the game, there was some talk about, Belichick was asked about Bailey Zappe and whether they might go with him over Hoyer. And it probably was the better choice, you know, in the end to go with him. But I don't think, to me, it didn't matter who was under center. I thought that New England's offensive line just kicked the crap out of the Packers. You know, all this stuff about, you know, their techniques and stuff need to be better, And no, they just got their butts kicked. Mm-hmm. And they have to figure it out. I also think that Joe Barry kind of, and I'm curious about this, I thought he underplayed the fact that they kept bringing in Marcus Cannon. They're just added him from their practice squad as an extra offensive lineman.
Is that the 61 is eligible? Reported
as yeah,
eligible.
Yeah, and they just kept bringing him in. They lined a tight end, and Barry went with three defensive linemen and his two outside linebackers and never said, all right, I'm going to bring in a fourth defensive lineman and just play this, you know, in a different way and make them throw the ball. And I just, I asked LaFleur about it after the game, and he said, we're going to look at that. You know, we'll look at everything. But that just, I didn't understand that.
Which is the depth of this defense, too, is the defensive line. From a personnel standpoint, we've talked about it since the start of camp.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
This is now twice in four games that Joe Barry hasn't made in-game adjustments. So something that was hurting them.
Let me ask you this. Let me ask both your opinions, and this can just be a yes or no answer. With that in mind, and knowing that the only real holes on the defense tonight were Jair and then Adrian Amos, who went out with a probable concussion
that
early
hurt
on.
Too,
that did hurt.
Because he comes up in the box so much. But Rudy Ford spent a lot of time kind of helping out in the run game.
Yeah.
And Rudy Ford's not a cold scrub off the bench. He's been in this league for a decent amount of time.
Yeah, he made a huge third down stop to on a cover stop during, I think it might have been in overtime. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I just think Amos is more of a natural, you know, knows what gap he's supposed to be in. I don't know if Rudy Ford missed some gaps. I thought he played back a lot of the time anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't matter. They needed to fortify their defensive line. And 'cause even when they made it like a five-man or six-man front, it wasn't with big guys. And so they're getting knocked around by this extra offensive lineman, and they just got their butts kicked.
Well, it should be said, Adrian Amos's game is playing in the box and, mm-hmm. and helping in run support, being near the line of scrimmage. But what makes this more troubling to me is it's not the first time we've seen this season. I mean, David Montgomery ran it down their throats week two. And now the Patriots, when you know they're going to run, mm-hmm. you give up a lot of yards. So this is now a trend in four games, and it's one that they've got to clean up.
So all that to say, let's go back to the question I was going to ask you both. Yes or no question. Spoon, did Joe Barry get out-coached?
I don't know. I mean, they won, and they played well enough in spurts. I don't know if that's the answer to bring in four guys. I want to know what he has to say about it. I'd be curious what he has to say about it. I don't know that they did anything to really stop the run game, anything different. And so I don't know. Yeah, I guess they probably got out-coached, yeah.
Ryan?
I just think you need to see more in-game adjustments. When something's not working, you need to actually do something else.
Well, we don't know if they did make some adjustments, you know, how they played, you know, their guys. But I just wondered why they never. I'm just raising the question, why didn't they bring in a fourth defensive lineman?
It makes sense you go beef on beef. When they're bringing in an extra beef guy, bring in an extra beef guy if they're running it down your throats, which is what they did.
Mm-hmm.
What'll be interesting is when you go back, because I know you chart every play when you go back, is to see every time they did bring 61 in, like what adjustment, like was there anything different along the front?
Yeah, yeah. And I just, you know, I thought they counted on Rashawn Gary and Preston Smith to hold the edges on there. And every time I saw a double team, they were just crushing them up front with double team blocks and then getting up to the second level. I thought Devondre Campbell had probably one of his worst game of the year.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't look like he was really with it. Or it seems like at times he's trying to do too much. Like he's trying to live up to this all pro style and moniker. And I don't know. I think he just needs to get back to doing what he did that made him an all-pro.
I thought you had something to add to that. I'm sorry. with that in mind, let's kind of look at the linebackers with he and Quay as in particular. Quay Walker has such good speed. Do you think he relies on that too much at times to know he can make up for anything he misses?
He's raw. I mean, there's no question that he's a raw talent right now. There's a lot of talent. There was a play first half when he took a bad angle inside and he was still able to chase, I forget the ball carrier, but he's still able to chase one of the running backs to the sideline. And, I mean, you see that raw talent for sure. But, yeah, I think in terms of angles, and to me, that was really the biggest thing that I noticed is watching the run defense even more than, I'll be honest, the defensive line. Because, you know, Jaron Reed had 8 tackles. He was all over the field. I thought Rashawn Gary not just played phenomenally. I mean, he had 2 sacks, a strip fumble. But he was really good in the run. I mean, chasing down from the backside, there was multiple times where he had impressive closing speed, which is what, going back to his days in Michigan, his coaches have always raved about is not just the pass rush, but his closing speed from the backside against the run. You saw that a lot today. But I thought that the 2 inside linebackers, the angles were very much all over the place. And both those guys, yeah, I mean, they're 2 really talented guys, no question. They're very athletic. But at linebacker is a game of angles. And when you are off on your angle, you give up yards in the run game.
Yeah, I think the other thing is that, you know, we know that the Patriots try to neutralize, you know, the best thing that any any unit has. And so I think they found Kenny Clark all the time, and I think they took him out of the game. Mm-hmm. And I think he got doubled a lot. I'm going to be interested to see how much he did get doubled, what they did with him on some of their blocking. But they just took him out of the game. He was not a factor in the game. And he's so important to their defense. Mm-hmm. You know, he's the one who causes all the disruption in their defense.
I would want to go back, too, and see what it was that he got flagged for. Because they called it unnecessary roughness when Preston Smith and Dean Lowry had the sack.
He pushed Andrews down by his head. It was sort of a late thing by the pile. Mm-hmm. And I think Clark thought that maybe he was going after his knees, and mm-hmm. so he shoved his head down.
That drive was a game changer because, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. At that point, the Packers, they had just scored a touchdown, and they were up 14-10. And then Zappi is sacked for a loss of 6. I mean, that's a game changer because you're back at middle of the field. But instead, they get to they were on their side of the field. Instead, they get to midfield, and then Damian Harris just ran it down their throat. And then they got a little clock fairy to help them on the delay a game not called for the touchdown. Second week in a row that's happened.
I want to know, probably should have had a pool reporter go down and see if the scoreboard was off, you know, because the officials keep the clock themselves. And so I don't know if something went wrong there, like maybe the clock was off or what, but it was too big of a discrepancy for them not to have made that mm-hmm. call. And I'm really surprised that I asked LaFleur about it after the game and the sideline didn't know anything about it.
Because mm-hmm. it was like a good 3 seconds, it felt like.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I didn't know anything about it except that on the blog people were bringing it up, and apparently they brought it up on the broadcast.
Hey, I missed it in the press box, I'll be honest. I didn't notice.
Yeah, I
just saw it on the replay on
yeah,
Twitter.
Yeah, I never look at the play clock. Yeah. You know, so, and I don't know if that was a factor in them, like, letting their guard down because they saw the clock was going down. I don't know.
There was a lot of looking around after that touchdown, so that would be interesting to find out a little bit more.
They could have been looking around. Who's supposed to cover Devontae Parker? Because nobody did.
That's true. As I said, though, before that touchdown, the Packers had just scored a touchdown, a deep seam. It was a 20-yard shot to Robert Tonyan. That's his first touchdown since October 24th of last year against Washington. He tore his ACL. one day later. He told me in the locker room afterwards, he said, it's been 300 some odd days. He said the number. I can't remember. He said, it's been 364 days, and I felt every one of the 364 of them. So, I mean, getting him back in that capacity, getting a little bit more of his legs under him. Ryan, I know you talked to him this week, and he talked to you a lot about, like, where he still needed to get to. Does this touchdown feel like a big step in that direction?
I thought it was a significant step. The touchdown reminded me a lot of a touchdown he had 2020 at the Colts. You know, Robert, it was the same type of play, only it was on the left side, I believe. Might have been the right side. But Robert Tonyan, at his best, stretches the seam vertically. That is what he does. And on the play, he blew past Matthew Judon from his in-line position and leaped in front of two safeties down the left, the right seam. And that's vintage. That's what he did before the injury. When I talked to him, he admitted that, you know, right now it's just regaining confidence. I mean, his knee feels fine. He said it was a really big play last week against the Bucks that he got hit. He got gator rolled by Antoine Winfield Jr. Right on his left knee at the sidelines, just a 3-yard gain, but getting hit full force on a dead sprint by a safety on the knee and feeling nothing was big, not because it was proof that the knee held up, because he feels good with the knee. It was just the confidence that it can take a hit and he'll be fine. I think any player that goes through an injury like that, you've got to know. Jaire Alexander, different injury, shoulder and not an ACL. He said the same thing about it, just, you know, the confidence of being able to use his shoulder when he tackles, when he came back from the AC joint injury. You go through an injury like that, that's one of the biggest hurdles that you got to take. So we'll see. You know, Robert Tunney has been a part of this offense at a pretty impressive rate, considering it's his first four games back from an ACL. I mean, he's been getting a lot of catches. He was on pace going into today for his career high in catches. It was just he was under 8 yards per reception. So that's been the missing ingredient, is stretching the field vertically, something he did before the injury. And to see that, I think that's significant.
Spoon, did you want to add
something? Yeah, I mean, I still think he looks sluggish. Like, anytime they throw it out in the flat, I keep waiting for him to break a tackle, run over somebody, mm-hmm. and he looks really hesitant. Like, anytime he's about to get hit, he goes down. This was probably more of natural for him to just run down the seam, and Rodgers did a really nice job of looking off the safety on the left side. It was a cover two, and he split the safeties and threw it right down the middle, and that's where Tanyan's at his best, or has been at his best. But they really need to have him, you know, where they throw it out in the flat and he jumps over somebody, or he breaks a tackle, or he stiff arms or something. It's going to take a while, I guess, for that to happen. And it's just taking him time. And we've seen it, too, with Elgton Jenkins. Elgton Jenkins got his butt kicked in the game. I mean, he gave up so many pressures to Judon that it was actually kind of eye-opening. And I guess it just takes time for these guys coming off the ACLs.
I don't feel like that was a big part of his game, and making plays on short and turning short passes into, you know, longer gains before the injury. I felt like he just wore out the seams vertically. I mean, that's what he did. It was a lot of downfield stuff. You know, the play that comes to mind in terms of sluggish, I agree. I think that he has looked sluggish in the short passing game. The play in the second half where he caught a ball on the left, and he looked sluggish on that play. Now, Alan Lazard got blown up as a blocker on that play, and I don't know if he had really anywhere to go. But to me, Robert Tunney's never been a jukey guy. He's never been a make-you-miss guy. He's a guy
that wears out the seam. No, but he's a power guy. When he gets moving, he can run. And so, I mean, I always thought he was really good along, you know, in the flats, doing, you know, like an out route and then turning it up the field. He's a big, strong guy, and he just doesn't have any burst. You know, I don't know. He must have gotten down the field pretty well on that touchdown. But when I see him in the short area, and when there's guys around him trying to tackle him, he just doesn't look like the same guy.
And that's one of the things Robert Tonyan told me too, is getting the feeling back being a ball carrier and feeling natural carrying the ball again. It wasn't running routes. It was as a ball carrier, and he wanted to get, he said, his wiggle back. Because there isn't a lot of wiggle right now. It's very straight line.
Yeah.
And on the short passing game, I can see some sluggishness. But I think when you're not confident as a ball carrier, and that's where he's at right now, he's got to regain that.
Yeah, that's good.
It's not an indictment on the knee. I don't think we know that yet. Over time, that might avail itself. We don't know, but he's got to get that confidence back.
I mean, if it is the knee, it's just now been 11 months.
Yeah, it hasn't been a year. They say usually it's a year and a half before you're back to yourself as a, after an ACL. Mm-hmm. But their hope has got to be that second half of the year that he starts to look more like himself. They're going to really, really need it big time.
Someone that has stepped up for them more than once is Romeo Doubs. Aaron Rodgers could not say enough good things about him tonight and about the trust and confidence that he now has in Doubs. And that's even after two plays that could have been a dagger or really kind of helped the Patriots swing it their way. There was the fumble on the second play of the game, which Rodgers took the blame for.
And he should have.
It was an incredible catch. Really.
It was.
Anything, it was impressive. Yeah.
And Rodgers said, I sure wish that he would have dropped it, which probably because it was such a bad pass and great catch. He was off balance on a screen, right? I mean, how often do you see that? And being off balance led to the fumble directly. He didn't secure it. He was off balance from the get-go.
He was on his fingertips. I mean, and then Jack Jones just came in and punched it out before he could get grip on it. Yeah, it was Rodgers' fault. But then, you know, the touchdown again, it wasn't even necessarily anything he did bad. It was just not taking the extra step to do it right. On the touchdown fourth quarter, it was, 2:08 left to go in the game. Romeo had his guy beat, and that would have been the game winner. I mean, Spoon, is that something that it just kind of is going to take a little bit more time in the weight room, a grip on the ball?
Yeah, I think that's exactly what I was thinking about, was when this guy has a year off, an off season to really build and work on himself, I think in 3 years he'll be an impressive force if he works in a weight room, because he's got a pretty big build, and you see him in the locker room, he's really thin. You don't want him to lose too much of his quickness, but if he can bulk up a little bit, I think he could be a really good player. I mean, he is a good player now. Mm-hmm.
He used that frame on the back shoulder throw for the 15-yard touchdown.
Yeah,
And we saw him do that in the preseason, too, I think, against the Saints on a similar play. He knows how to use his body. I wouldn't actually agree that he did nothing wrong on the drop touchdown. He fell directly on the football. And, in fact, when the media walked into the locker room after the game, Matt LaFleur was at Romeo Doubs' locker, positively pumping him up, but telling him, when you have a catch, don't fall flat on front. Don't fall on the ball. Catch it and roll to protect the ball. And he was physically demonstrating how to do that. That's just, for a rookie, that's just a trick of the trade for a rookie to learn. That's a fairly easy fix for him.
Mm-hmm. But then in overtime, Rodgers went to him back-to-back on an 8-yarder and then a 9-yarder. And then from there, it was just kind of A.J. Dillon getting it where Mason Crosby wanted it. And they were able to run out the clock with a game winner.
Well, you know what was impressive about that drive was that it was very non-Aaron Rodgers-centric. It was I think he did hit – didn't he hit Cobb for a – key first down in there,
and the big play of the game is the second of the drive was the second play where they used it. At that point, the Patriots were selling out on wide zone, which is why you saw A.J. Dillon at the end, because they wanted to go downhill between the tackles. The first play of the drive was a 3-yard outside zone to the right, And then that second play where Rodgers hit Lazard, I think, for 22 yards, they action faked the wide zone with Jones to the left, and they got him to bite, and that's what opened up Allen Lazard. And then after that, you saw all inside zone A.J. Dillon.
Yeah, you saw Dillon 7 yards, Dillon 2 yards. Mm-hmm. Then he hit Cobb on 3rd and 1, which Cobb ran a good route, was open. And then Dobbs, those were just – essentially handoffs. The guy was playing 8 yards off him, and Rodgers just threw him out to there, and Dobbs got up the field for 15 yards on 2 catches, and then Dillon finished the drive off. So it was, you know, Rodgers did not have his best day by any means, and some of these other guys picked up for him.
Before you dive into the Rodgers part of it, I did want to just share this quote that he said after the game on, you know, Romeo not securing that touchdown on the 2-minute mark at the fourth quarter and then going to him twice there. He said, Romeo is growing. He's making some plays. I hit him twice in that last drive, so obviously I have confidence in him. I want him to key on the third down. I went to him on the key third down with 2 minutes left in the game. I'm not going to lose confidence in him. Obviously, we'll hold him accountable, but he's a great kid. I threw a third down back shoulder fade to him for a touchdown, so I'd say I have some confidence in him. Because, I mean, those back shoulders, that's kind of Pat and Rodgers. But, you know, as Pete was kind of telling me in the press box, just the history of it, you know, like that's always what he would throw to Jordy and to Randall Cobb. And the fact that he's trusting a rookie with him in a key situation in week 4 says just a lot about the confidence he has in Dobbs already.
Well, he's got to. He's got no choice because he's got the talent to justify that kind of patience. I mean, Romeo Dobbs through 4 games, still small sample size, but through 4 games, he's looked every bit as impressive as Davante Adams did as a rookie, if not more so. You know, now Davante Adams kind of, you know, famously had a slow start to his career in his first 2 seasons, but so it's not saying that Romeo Dobbs is going to be Davante Adams, but as a rookie, the talent, the production, the confidence, he's looked every bit, if not more impressive than Davante Adams did in 2014.
Another reason why you don't need to take wide receivers in the first round.
Right. Even their second-round wide receiver, he's out playing their second-round wide receiver. Although Watson is continuing to flash his speed. I think he hit over 20 miles per hour tonight on the jet sweep he took for the touchdown.
And made it because Dobbs, especially because Dobbs laid just a beautiful block on a safety coming over. I mean, it was just perfect. You know, the guy is not just a one-trick pony.
Let's talk about a couple of these other receivers before we get into Rodgers. We have joked about, you know, third and Cobb never failing, and he came up a couple of times again tonight. Does it seem like he's also beginning to go to Allen Lazard in those situations? Can he kind of just I've heard the word gritty applied to Allen Lazard a couple of times now. It's how he described the win to me last week as well in Tampa. Is he kind of becoming that guy that you can just get your dirty yards with?
He's always gone. I mean, he's been going to Allen Lazard in those situations, going back to last season. I think when his chemistry hit a new level with Rodgers was the final 5 games of last season, they had 5 touchdowns together, and they've just carried that over. You know, Allen Lazard for the first time this season that he's played, I think he didn't have a touchdown. I think he had 2 in the first 2 games, but he had 100 yards. So Allen Lazard, Robert Tonyan, and Randall Cobb are the guys that he's going to be wired to go to in critical situations. You know what's funny about that 3rd and 1 near midfield in the final drive in overtime? A.J. Dillon was wide open on that play. Easy first down. No one around him. Cobb was open, but you know, it was a contested catch. He went to Cobb and Stepman. Those are the 3 guys, and then more and more you're going to see Romeo Dobbs get opportunities in big moments.
That being said, Rodgers had a rough start. I know that the first drive ended after 2 plays with the fumble, but then I think at one point he had overthrown 3 straight guys, and it was over the course of 2 drives, but he overthrew Christian Watson, he overthrew Allen Lazard, he overthrew Randall Cobb.
Was it Cobb?
Cobb on the left sideline. Down, yeah, he may have overthrown Dobbs too, but I know I'm thinking of one with Cobb. Common denominator there is Rodgers. He was having an off day and then came out in the third quarter and seemed to have kind of gotten it together at Spooner. I know that was the focus of what you were looking at after the game. What do you think the issue and then the fix was?
Well, I think he had a bad first half. And I think, you know, we're all used to seeing him throw for hundreds of yards. And if he has a bad half, to come back and throw for 300 yards or whatever it was, like the Bears game in 2018. I think we're going to see less of that this year, partially because who he's playing with. Partially, he's getting older, and there's going to be times when that when his skill levels, declining skill level, is going to show a little bit. I don't know what was up today with the inaccuracy. There were some times he got pressured. The pick six was a terrible throw. I'm not sure where that ball was supposed to be.
Shouldn't have been thrown there, period.
Did you see what Rodgers said? Or did you hear? You were in Rodgers, so mm-hmm. I know you heard it. He said if I had thrown it better, he would have even caught it in better stride.
In stride, yeah.
Talking
yeah,
about
he
the
almost
Jones.
Overthrew it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, when they needed him, he combined with the players to make plays. And I don't want to give him all the credit for some of those plays, because the catch Alan Lazard made down the left side or down the right sideline, you know, diving. I mean, Rodgers put it in a good spot, yeah. But Lazard just made a great catch mm-hmm. and beat his guy.
It was a dime, though. I mean, it was.
It was, but the end of it, you know, usually what we're talking about is how Rodgers fit it between two guys, or, you know, and hit Adams right in stride. I think we're seeing more of other guys combining, and it's not all Rodgers. He's got 6 touchdowns and 3 interceptions after 4 games. That's not that's his worst start since 2010, when he had 8 touchdowns and 5 interceptions, which is
weird
because
ended.
He won a Super Bowl. Yeah. Yeah. But usually when he's had 3 interceptions before, but he had like 10 touchdowns to go with it, or 9 touchdowns. So I think this is kind of what we're going to see for a lot of the year. He'll have some big 300-yard games, 400-yard games against Detroit or Washington or something like that. But there's a lot of good defensive teams on the schedule. And so I just don't think he's going to have big piles of numbers.
I think the interceptions are kind of a byproduct, too, of a lot of moving different pieces around him. I mean, there's a lot of unfamiliarity. That's why I mentioned the 3 guys, Cobb, Lazard, and Tonyan, because this is as little familiarity as he's had surrounding him in a long, long time.
Well, let's see. Who is he throwing them to? He threw to his one interception was to Cobb in Minnesota. What was the
that was just a heave
and
off
that,
of his
that
back
was being
foot, too
reliant on that familiarity.
Yeah.
He couldn't even see Cobb.
The one
let
today
that ball go.
Was to Lazard.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was the third one? Was it Chicago or was it Tampa? Now I can't even remember.
He threw it in Tampa, and it was
to
over the middle.
It was to Tonyan.
Oh, yeah. That's right. So it's not like they were blown
routes
by anybody.
It's kind of funny that it's the 3 guys that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Well, that, my point is that he's relying on it too much because there's a lack of familiarity. He's not familiar with the other guys. Mm-hmm. So that's not a surprise. You know, he's the one in Minnesota is the best example, where he just throws a punt up to Randall Cobb, and you can't throw jump balls down the field to 5'10 receivers. That doesn't work out very well, but that's what he does because that's where he's familiar. I think the interceptions are the most alarming thing, because we've never seen him throw interceptions until, I mean, I mentioned it during the game on Twitter. He's on pace for 12 picks now this season. That would be his most since his rookie year, his first year as a starter in 2008. It would be the first time, only the third time in the first time ever, in the first time since 2010 that he had double-digit interceptions. He's the master of not throwing double-digit picks.
Yeah.
He's the antithesis to Matthew Stafford, and that's where he's heading.
Like I said, four years, there's been 4 times since 2010 he started with 3 interceptions in 4 games. So it's not like it's totally unheard of. What happens is he usually just gets on this run, and then he goes and he doesn't throw any interceptions for a long time. He throws all these touchdowns. And I'm not sure he's in that place right now. I don't see that coming, where he's going to just throw like 16 straight touchdowns without an interception.
You could argue that's not a bad thing, by the way, because what's been a knock for anyone that's really paid attention on Aaron Rodgers over the years is the lack of interceptions, because it means he's not taking shots when he needs to take more shots. And I think you have seen him take more shots now. Sometimes they're kind of careless, like the one in Minnesota to Cobb, but it's not all entirely a bad thing if he throws a few more picks.
But I'm going to slightly disagree with you there, just because of the type of picks he's throwing. If this is like a new quarterback, or in this case, I mean, Rodgers is not a new quarterback, but a relatively new receiving core, if the interceptions are seeing what you can get away with, figuring out where your windows are, figuring out where your receiver's frame and catch radius is, those interceptions are one thing. That's not what these interceptions have been. These interceptions have been bad decisions.
Bad decisions, bad throws, but still taking shots. I mean, the one today, shouldn't have thrown the ball there. He took a shot. That's not something
you
see.
When you say take a shot, though, I'm thinking like a deep
shot.
No,
I'm talking trying to make a play where it's going to be a tough, difficult throw. I mean, he's been over the years too conservative at times with where he's thrown the ball. And you've seen less of that.
But isn't he, like,
that's not exactly a bad thing.
Made his money and made his reputation on tight window throws and making the ones that nobody else can.
He's made his reputation on not throwing interceptions.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not a bad thing that he's being less conservative there.
He doesn't take a lot of really bad chances. Mm-hmm. He's the kind of guy who he can throw through a tight window, but he'll throw it knowing that it's not going to be picked off. Mm-hmm. You know, he just does not take a lot of chances. And I don't know what happened. I asked LaFleur about that play. You know, it was usually the corner's way off in that situation. And LaFleur said that. He said the corner had been playing way off, so they called that. And that one time he decided to play it tight.
You know, that corner, Jack Jones, that's who had the pick six. That's who caused an incompletion for Romeo Doubs that I think could have been a touchdown, if I'm remembering correctly. Jack Jones had a good day. Mm-hmm. He's third on their depth chart. He started because Jalen Mills couldn't play, so there's not a ton of tape on him either.
He's a good player. Good player.
He was a
he
very
broke
good player
on that. You know, he's still throwing it through tight windows. There was the out route to the left in the red zone in Tampa to Romeo Doubs, where everyone in Raymond James Stadium thought that was going the other way for pick six, and he threaded it through. He had a really impressive against Tampa Bay, ball to Randall Cobb in a tight window on the left, a left slant up the seam. You know, he did today, the throw down field to Alan Lazard was a tight window. He still had those. In general, being a little less conservative with where he's throwing the ball, that's not a bad thing for him.
Mm-hmm. Bill Belichick said after the game, his opening statement was like, credit to Rodgers, he made the throws that only he can make, and, you know, it seemed like a lot of gamesmanship.
Where is this bromance gone from? I'm like, Belichick, you usually embrace no one, and now you're just, like, drooling over Aaron Rodgers because
– It's a good bad tour.
I said in my column, it's probably because he's just, like, dreaming that he wished he had Aaron Rodgers since he's gone now in his third year without Tom Brady.
Yeah.
And he's trying to win with these schleps.
Rodgers wouldn't tell people what their conversation was. Maybe that's what the conversation was about.
Maybe. Like, as I forgot who
be like, I can get you to 45, Roger Aaron.
Who said this? Greg Bedard, I think, one time said, you know, with Belichick, it's like the Fight Club thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the saying in
you
Fight
don't
Club.
Talk about Fight Club.
Yeah, is you don't talk about Fight Club. So yep. If you talk to Bill Belichick, the one thing you don't do is talk about what Bill Belichick.
The funny thing with Bill Belichick, I'll never forget 2014, my first year on the beat, they hosted the Patriots in November, and it was the first time I've ever talked to Bill Belichick, and I'm expecting on camera Bill Belichick, and it was off camera, a teleconference, and he waxed poetically about the entire Packers roster from Mike McCarthy as head coach on down, long-winded, insightful answers, really blowing up the Packers. That's actually who Bill Belichick is. I mean, the on-camera persona.
He's a fan of the game.
The on-camera persona is a persona.
Oh, he's a historian, too.
Historian, he brought up a former Packers player this week that I had to go look up who it was, talking about how
You have to look up Cecil Isbell?
I won't lie. I won't hide from it.
You didn't have to look up Don Hudson, did you?
No.
Are you sure?
I looked him up the other day. Did you see me Googling him?
No.
Oh, I looked him up the other day to make sure. For some reason, I always get the T and the D confused in the name. So I was just Googling him to make sure I had it right. And I was looking at pictures. I'm sure y'all have an opinion on this. And I was like, this man could have been a movie star.
He was quite... the player. I mean, he was Jerry Rice before Jerry Rice in an era when there was no such thing as Jerry Rice.
Was he a coach and a player at the same time?
At the end of his career, no, that was probably Curly Lambeau. I don't know. I don't know if he was.
That was like a one-year overlap, I thought.
I actually saw Don Hudson. When they built the Don Hudson Center, he was still alive, and he came and they did a ceremony for him.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this, Cassidy. My whole first season, I thought it was Hudson. So, yeah, it took me a minute.
It's kind of written right on that building
I'm very observant, clearly.
400 feet letters, you know, or
green, white background. Yep. Very, very easy to miss.
Can't miss it. Okay, I know that we are running out of time, but just real quick, Ryan, pop us in. I know you talked to David Bakhtiari. Because of Yosh Nijman's illness, or I'm assuming it's because of Yosh Nijman's illness. He played tonight, but not a lot. It was mostly David Bakhtiari. No pitch count tonight.
Yeah, and it was not just Yosh Nijman's illness. It was a lot about how David Bakhtiari's knee felt throughout the game. The plan coming in had been for David Bakhtiari to play two drives and then Yosh Nijman get one. And that was essentially what they did to start because the first drive, of course, was two plays because of Romeo Doubs' fumble. So he got the first two plays, then two drives, and then Yosh Nijman came in the fourth drive, and then Yosh Nijman was on the field for three and out, and he never saw the field again. And David Bakhtiari told me that he and Luke Buckus, the offensive line coach, were looking at each other after every drive. How's it feel? How are you doing? He's like, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. He doesn't know how he's going to respond tomorrow. He said, just like Tampa Bay, he's all hyped up on adrenaline right now, and he's going to see how it responds Monday morning. But that was, yes, Yosh Nijman's illness had something to do with that for sure, but it was as bit, if not even more, David Bakhtiari's knee felt pretty good, and that's huge.
Maybe those times that Yosh Nijman is on the bench when they're rotating, he should go over to right tackle and move Elgton Jenkins to guard because – for whatever reason, Jenkins is not responding well to playing at right tackle. He's proved he can play right tackle, but he's really struggling.
That's where this Jenkins has eventually got to go, right? I mean, this has eventually got to go. You can't just put – Yosh Nijman has proved over 10 starts and 750 snaps the past year that he can play at bare minimum a serviceable left tackle. The way that the league is now, you've got good pass rushers on both sides. It's the – days of needing that rugged, run-blocking right tackle are really gone. I mean, you've got to be able to hold up and pass pro on both sides. You can't just take a left tackle who can play as bare minimum an average starter and put him on the sideline. You've got to get him on the field at right tackle, which puts Elgton Jenkins on the interior where he was a Pro Bowler. I know he can play every position well, but he's best inside. That's where he went to
the Pro
Bowl. Yeah,
they
got to
get back to doing that, yep. I agree.
Elgton Jenkins, though, maybe, I need to watch the replay, have saved this game for the Green Bay Packers. Because for whatever reason that only God knows, they elected to go with like a hook and ladder, a bunch of laterals on the last play of a tie game. A tie game. If Randall Cobb throws that just slightly off, that gets picked off and run back for a touchdown, and then New England Patriots with a walk-off win. Yeah. But Elgton Jenkins jumped on it. Clock expired. We go to overtime. Alan Lazard said in the locker room, he said, as soon as we hit overtime and I knew we had the ball first, he said, I was chilling because I knew as long as we could get Crosby out there, like we were fine. He said, especially on that second drive. He said, as soon as we got the ball at midfield, he said, I was fine. I was chill. I knew we were winning.
I'm shocked they didn't go with the Hail Mary there. Shocked.
Yeah, I am too. I was really surprised.
I couldn't believe it. I thought for sure. I don't think Matt LaFleur was asked that after the game. That'll be a good question.
Yeah, he was asked something about it.
What do you say about that? Because that wasn't Matt LaFleur.
I don't think he said why he didn't do the Hail Mary, but he talked about the play, and he was like, yeah, that wasn't the smartest thing.
He said, definitely did not want the pitch. That's just the decision based on the look we had.
I don't use the word shocked very often. I was shocked that they didn't throw the Hail Mary there.
Well, they got it to overtime, punted on the first drive, were able – defense made the stop when they needed to on the New England Patriots drive, and from there it was all gravy. It was just kind of getting the ball where Crosby wanted it for a game winner. He said that as soon as they crossed midfield, he felt comfortable, especially with the fact that there was no breeze at that point. But, of course, if you can – get the ball down a little bit farther and go for the touchdown, you do, and they were able to run the clock down.
I thought it said something about this running back tandem that, I mean, how many teams in the NFL essentially sideline a 100-yard rusher because there's a better option on the sideline? And to Aaron Jones's credit, how many running backs take that in stride? You know, how many lead running backs take that type of, in that moment, that in stride? I think A.J. Dillon really he reasserted his value and importance to being this run game being the foundation of this offense because, yeah, Aaron Jones is putting together a really good start to his season. Now, half of the four games he's been over 100 yards, but the key to having this running back tandem be the foundation, the engine, is having it be a tandem. And over the course of a long season, you need A.J. Dillon. And, you know, he could have slipped into the backdrop. But then when the rubber hits the road and it's the game-winning drive, he was the guy that, you know, they went downhill run and he delivered. It's impressive that the Packers can do that. Not a lot of teams can do that. And it says something about their relationship, which is huge. I mean, competition for one football among two RB1s can breed division, and the selflessness that's key to this offense working. They've got to be able to coexist, and they do that really, really well.
Another solid night from Pat O'Donnell, 5 punts for 210 yards, an average of 42, a net of 32.
Yeah, he wasn't great. He wasn't as good as he was in Tampa. Yeah. His kicks weren't great. The coverage wasn't all that great. It was not a good day on special teams. Bill Belichick's special teams outperformed.
There's a couple of shanks for the Pats.
Isn't that kind of funny, though, that like how quickly we've changed our tune about special teams where it's like, oh, we had an average of 42 and a net of 32. You know, that means they're returning at an average of 10 yards. He only had two inside the 20, one downed at the 2-yard line, and we're like, ooh, off night.
Mm-hmm. And that was it. The biggest special teams play of the entire game was that punt down at the 2-yard line.
Yeah.
Second week in a row for Keyshawn Nixon.
Yeah.
Let's see if he can get it at the 1 next week.
I swear to God, both times he stepped out in the end zone, but I could have sworn he stepped in the end zone.
He must know exactly which blade of grass he can go to.
I swear both times he's been at the 1-yard line. I was surprised both times they put him at the 2, to be honest with you.
Well, let's see if he can get a little bit closer next week. Guys, it's been fun. Ryan, I know you head to London on Thursday.
Yes.
So he and Pete will be there with full coverage from jolly old London. But we still got a little bit more from this game to wrap up this week. Matt LaFleur will meet with the media Monday afternoon, and then they have a full Wednesday and Thursday before they head on a plane across the Atlantic. We will have full coverage for you as we wrap up this game and prepare for a 3-1 Giants team. Could be an interesting one. 8:30 in the morning next week.
Look at the NFC the NFC East being juggernauts.
I know, right? Yeah, between them, the Cowboys, the Eagles look real good. Could be an interesting one next week. But we'll finish wrapping up this one for you from Green Bay as well. The 27-24 overtime win over the New England Patriots. Guys, thanks so much as always. This has been the Green 19 Podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.